Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
He ko nā ipurangi tēnei nā te reo irirangi o Aotearoa.
Coming into the All Blacks, you're always under pressure. There's an expectation that you live up to what the jersey stands for.
Today, Pacifica players are commonplace in the All Blacks and rugby in general. But rugby hasn't always been this way. During Sir Brian Williams' time, there were some cultural barriers.
There hadn't been many Pacifica players selected since the 1930s.
During his 8 years with the All Blacks, he played 38 international tests, which included two tours to apartheid-era South Africa.
Williams again. Almost on the halfway line, Kirkpatrick to Williams.
In his first year, he made rugby history as the first Pacifica player to play for the All Blacks and be granted honorary white status to play in South Africa in 1970. And we'll get into that side of Sir Brian's rugby history shortly. Brian Williams grew up in Ponsonby, Auckland.
My neighbours, both up the road and across the road, were league people, and both their fathers were the coaches of this particular team. So I started playing rugby league for the Ponsonby Rugby League Club when I was 5 years old. I loved running with the ball, and when I was younger I was quite fast, so I could run faster than other kids, and as a result scored some tries. And when you score tries, it really whets your appetite for more.
Rugby league is fast-paced and physically brutal. There was no time to worry about scraped knees and bumps along the way.
I grew up with a couple of older brothers and a younger sister, and the older brothers used to put me through the hoops. We'd go down to the park during the weekends and play for hours, and I came out with a few scrapes and bruises and sometimes even more than that.
But when he was 10 years old, his league team disbanded, and that's when he'd make the transition to rugby.
Fortunately, I enjoyed it, and I've been at Ponsonby Rugby Club pretty much ever since, which was, that was 1960 when it started, so 61 years ago.
But even though he possessed a natural gift, that initial transition to rugby didn't come as easily as he'd anticipated. An early setback in his first 2 years taught a young Brian Williams that he should never rest on his laurels.
No, I had my ups and downs along the way. I can recall one time when I was 11 years old, and I had been selected for the Auckland primary school reps the year before, and as a result, I thought I was a shoo-in for the next year. And of course, when the team was named, I was left out. And I remember walking all the way home in the rain, bawling my eyes out, and vowing never ever to take anything for granted again. And I guess I didn't take anything for granted after that.
A natural athlete, Brian Williams has played alongside top players in the world. So it's kind of surprising that the two people he looked up to most were much closer to home than you'd expect.
Well, my two older brothers, Sess and Ken, were probably pretty big influences in my rugby career. And Mum and Dad obviously encouraged me a great deal, but there were lots of different coaches too. When I left Mount Albert Grammar School in 1967, I immediately made the Ponsonby senior team, and we had a tour to Japan straight out of school. So that was fun. And one of the guys who was my hero, I guess at that stage, was Malcolm Dick. He was an All Black, and he wasn't able to go on that Ponsonby tour.
Malcolm had played for the All Blacks from 1963 to 1970.
He basically stood aside and allowed me to go on the tour in his place.
And just 3 years later, in 1970, Brian would be playing alongside him. It was an exciting and daunting time, but one we also felt he had to prove himself.
It was groundbreaking stuff. I was only 19, selected for the first time alongside many of my heroes, Colin Meads, Brian Lahore, Malcolm Dick, as I mentioned, and a whole array of other top players who I'd spent the 1960s absolutely idolising, and then suddenly I was selected alongside them. So I was terrified of living up to their expectations.
But as a Pacifica player, there was an added layer on top.
Coming into the All Blacks, you're always under pressure. There's an expectation that you live up to what the jersey stands for. But also, there hadn't been many Pacifica players selected since the 1930s. And so I realised that I was representing my people, my heritage, and had an extra responsibility.
But there were others who came before him. Walter Batty was the first Tongan player to don an All Blacks jersey in the late 20s. Then came Dave and Frank Solomon, the first Samoan players, who between them played for the All Blacks from the early to mid-1930s.
Honours so far between New Zealand and Africa.
Here Frank Solomon plays at a crowded Eden Park, Auckland against the Springboks, in archival audio from Ngatonga Sound and Vision in 1937.
Auckland falling onto the ground, led by Colleen. Auckland in black and white. Some big fellas among this Auckland team. Frank Solomon there second. Several other big
Brian forwards. Had the privilege of getting to know the Solomon brothers, who were also associated with the Ponsonby Rugby Club.
I knew both Frank and Dave, and they were getting elderly, I guess, later on. But when I was playing for the All Blacks, they were still around, and they were lovely gentlemen. I really, really enjoyed their company.
So what advice did the Solomon brothers pass down?
The main thing was just to enjoy the game and do your best every time. And that's the point about if you want to get to the top, you can't let your guard down. You've got to train hard and play well when you get the opportunities, so that when the time comes for selection, the selectors can't leave you out.
And Brian would make the most of his time on the field. In his first year, he was selected to play in South Africa for a three-month tour. It was then that his mixed-race background came to the fore.
Yeah, my mum was born in Rarotonga and my dad was born in Samoa. And believe it or not, I also had a grandmother who was born in Tonga. So I cover the whole range.
It was a story that made history. As a player of mixed-race descent, Brian was granted honorary white status to play in apartheid-era South Africa. Apartheid, defined as apartness in Afrikaans, was a system of legislation with policies around racial segregation that separated blacks and those of coloured skin from the much more privileged whites.
Well, it was a big deal, and it was a history-making tour because it was also the first tour where players of dark blood were allowed to be selected for the All Blacks. Prior to that, the abhorrent system of apartheid prevented any Maori or Pacifica players being included in the All Blacks. On top of that, of course, was the apartheid issue. How was I going to be treated when I got to South Africa?
In this audio from TV documentary Mud and Glory, a young Brian Williams expresses some concerns about the upcoming tour.
Well, initially I was very scared. I remember when the plane touched down in Johannesburg, I just wanted the plane to turn right around again.
But what did this honorary white status look like in reality?
Well, I think that was an absolute nonsense. It was a means by which the South Africans justified selecting dark-skinned people to tour to South Africa. And what a nonsense. I knew what I was, and the Maori boys knew what they were. And, if someone wanted to give us a silly label, good luck to them. Some people would say that we shouldn't have gone to South Africa. We should have protested and not gone.
Brian felt he had a lot to prove, not only to the other players, but also to the world.
You know, when we got to South Africa, we were treated just like all the other players really just got on with the job of being an All Black and trying to win a series. In terms of apartheid, it was also a question of representing the the black and coloured people of South Africa, just to illustrate to them that we could compete at the top level, and just to know that it was giving them some hope.
As soon as he was in his comfort zone on the field, the 19-year-old impressed a roaring crowd, as you can hear from this 1970 archival audio from the tour.
Put in, it's a tight hit, the New Zealand's going, he's got it, he's running on the short side, he's downfield, he's still going, he's got it out to Williams, they won't stop him, Williams has crashed through, two tackles, one of them will stand, he's gone past Jones and he's left him standing, and he goes straight between the posts.
In South Africa, he scored 14 tries in 13 appearances, and his abilities didn't go unnoticed by his teammates, including veteran player Colin Meads, who recalls a tour in TV documentary Mud and Glory.
And I said, you know, come on, I've got a room with this guy to get to know him. I said, you know, he's such a great player, we've got to get to know this fella a bit.
But there was another layer to that experience on the tour. Other than immediately being labelled and identified as a Samoan player or a player of dark blood, Brian and the three Māori players, Sid Going, Buff Milner and Blair Furlong, were embraced by the local black community.
I think they took us to their hearts. We were perhaps their favourites, and it was a strange scenario. You know, the black and coloured people had to sit at the ends of the grounds, and everyone else was sitting along the sidelines. When we were able to score tries in front of our fans, they absolutely loved it. So that was great. I have always felt that by going to South Africa in 1970, the three Māori boys and myself helped to create a bit of a chink in the arm of apartheid. And eventually, of course, we saw in 1991... Nelson Mandela become president of South Africa, so it was an interesting time for sure.
So Brian also had a chance to go back to South Africa in 1976. By then, he had witnessed some change.
We certainly were able to mix with the local people, and particularly in 1976, probably not so much in 1970. I went into the homes of coloured and black South Africans and had meals with them. And you might say, well, that's tokenism or whatever, but the fact was we started to see gradual changes taking place in South Africa, and people talking about how they were discriminated against and the poverty and the lack of opportunity, and, you know, it was awful, really, to hear about it.
Did you ever see that there were then any parallels between what was happening there and even New Zealand, but on a much smaller sort of scale?
Oh, well, you could always see parallels. You know, some people are less well off than other people. And
two, Brian Williams, that's three for New Zealand.
So Brian played 9 seasons with the All Blacks, retiring the black jersey in 1978, just 2 years after his second tour to South Africa. During his career, he played 113 matches, including 38 international tests, and scored 66 tries, which at the time was a record until it was beaten by John Kerwin. Not that retiring from the All Blacks came by choice. Like many athletes, injury struck. Brian wasn't in a position to continue playing at the top level.
In 1977, when we were in France, I dislocated my left hip. And although I managed to make it back and play for the All Blacks the following year, it really affected my speed and my ability to run effectively, and became pretty apparent that my time with the All Blacks was just about done.
And was that devastating for you?
Oh, I don't know about devastating. I've always been a realist.
Brian played for 2 further years for Auckland Rugby following his stint in the All Blacks before hanging up his boots as a player altogether. And while today in the sporting world there's been a massive global shift in attention to the mental health of athletes, Brian says having a career to fall back on enabled him to have something to focus on after injury.
The game was amateur back then. You didn't get paid for playing the game. So it was very important that you made your way in life away from rugby. Rugby was a hobby, a passion. It was a beautiful pastime.
Rugby didn't become a professional sport in New Zealand until 1995, so having a backstop was more of a necessity.
To be quite frank about it, I'm pleased I played rugby in that era because it meant that you had to study or do an apprenticeship or something and learn work ethic very early in your working life. Some of the young professional players who retire nowadays have got no training for life after rugby, so it's a real issue for them.
Although they might have lots of money in the bank, would you think?
Well, some do and some don't. And once again, it's a question of how well managed their money has been. You know, have they spent it all and bought flash cars and wasted it, or have they invested wisely? And that's the issue with many of them. I was perhaps a wee bit fortunate. I had a profession to go to.
By this time, Brian and his wife had had their first child, and while he'd been playing with the All Blacks, he was also completing a law degree.
Dare I say it, I failed everything in my first year. The dean of the law faculty got me into his office. He said, listen here, Mr. Williams, he said, they tell me you're not a bad rugby player. He said, but you're going to have to shape up or ship out.
And Brian was not one to back down, so he towed the line. But that doesn't mean Sir Brian left rugby behind completely. He went on to coaching.
Well, I did coach in New Zealand. My great friend Maurice Trapp and I coached the Auckland team of the late 1980s. We followed John Hart and then preceded Graham Henry. And that era of Auckland rugby was perhaps the most successful period that we've seen in New Zealand rugby.
And he's continued to be passionate about supporting and advocating for Pacifica players.
It was at a time when Samoa was trying to qualify for the Rugby World Cup. They'd missed out in 1987. I was asked if I would join the coaching group. And that was the team that was captained by Papali'i Tali, Peter Fatilofa. We took the rugby world by storm. I then was able to coach the Samoan team right through the 1990s up till 1999. We had a lot of success during that period.
Would you say there were any obstacles along the way in terms of kind of breaking through and being noticed in the wider rugby environment?
Yes, lots of obstacles, and the biggest of which was when rugby went professional in 1995. Samoa, to that point, had made the Rugby World Cup quarterfinals in both 1991-1995, and Fiji had made the quarterfinals in 1987. We'd both been part of Super Rugby competitions in New Zealand prior to 1995, and then suddenly when the game went professional, the Pacific Islands were left totally out in the cold.
But the big question, why were Pacific nations left out to begin with?
I felt aggrieved about it at the time, so did many others. It's taken us 26 years to get a satisfactory outcome where in 2022 we're finally going to have a Pacifica Super Rugby team. In fact, we're going to have two with Moana Pacifica and the Fiji Drua. All we ask is for an even playing field so that all these young people can show the pride and play for their heritage. If they were able to, I think World Rugby would be great beneficiaries.
And he's had an extraordinary career looking back. In 1983, he was appointed a member of the Order of the British Empire for his services to rugby. In 2013, in the Queen's Birthday Honours, he was appointed a Companion of the New Zealand Order of Merit. And 5 years later, in 2018, he was promoted to Knight. That same year,
He was also inducted into the World Rugby Hall of Fame.
Yeah, well, that was obviously very special, and I feel very honoured and privileged to be honoured in those particular ways.
But for Sir Brian, regardless of the titles, the most important thing to him is the game itself. These days, Sir Brian still lives in Auckland, where he continues to support home turf, the Ponsonby Rugby Club, where it all began.
One of the things that's given me the greatest pleasure, I guess, is winning championships for my club at Ponsonby. You know, it's great going to the top of the tree in terms of All Blacks and winning Grand Slams and winning series and that, but I'd have to say I think the biggest thrill, other than perhaps the first time I made the All Blacks, is winning the Gallagher Shield here in Auckland for my club, Ponsonby. The club means so much. Ponsonby have really supported me for so many years. I played alongside my two brothers for the Premier team, and both my two sons and my nephew have also played in the Premier team and won Gallagher Shields with Ponsonby. It just means so much to me.
You've been listening to Eyewitness, and that was Sir Brian Williams. The sound engineer was Steve Burridge, and I'm your host and producer, Sonia Yee. Special thanks goes to Ngā Taonga Sound and Vision for providing archival audio. If you'd like to listen to any other episodes from the series, you can head to the RNZ series and podcast page and look for Eyewitness, or download and follow via Apple, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or wherever you get your podcasts. Catch you next time.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.